This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I am reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System for All Brass Instruments. This is tape number 8. I will continue with the tonguing chapter, question 29. How are the duties of the tongue related during the mouthpiece placement, and during the inhalation, and during the attack itself? While the mouthpiece placement is being enacted, the tip of the tongue must contact the lower teeth or the lower gums. During the M, that is capital I, capital M, mouth corner inhalation, the tongue must recede about 1/16 of an inch away from the teeth. When executing the attack, the tongue must be blown forward so that it strikes the back of the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher, depending upon the range being played. Without hesitancy, the tongue must snap back and down in some cases to permit the cone-like ear column to move forward for the purpose of vibrating the lips for the particular tone being played. Thus, these three tongue duties are related, both by continuity and split-second timing. Question number 30. What is meant by tonguing on the bump? The expression tonguing on the bump refers to the tongue striking the rugae, or ledge of the upper gums. This, however, does not refer to the forepart of the roof of the mouth. Question number 31. Is it to the performer's benefit to tongue as high in the mouth as possible? Generally speaking, it is to the performer's benefit to tongue as high in the mouth as possible. With the exception of the tongue types 4, 7, and 8, which have been discussed earlier in this chapter, tonguing high in the mouth reduces or eliminates excessive movement and offers less interference to the embouchure formation and its vibrating fluency. Conceivably, the tongue could strike too high in the mouth, whereupon the playing definition will suffer. But ordinarily, this will never happen unless the player himself is continually forcing his tongue higher in his mouth. Question 32. Is it true that some fine brass performers permit their tongues to penetrate between their teeth and lips? It is true that some fine brass performers permit their tongues to penetrate between their teeth and lips. However, they are rapidly becoming a minority group as modern ranges increase. The extremely destructive tongue penetration habit, that is, allowing the tongue to penetrate between the teeth and the lips, has terminated more brass playing careers than any other single cause. Any performer who is afflicted with this playing vice should make every effort to eradicate it as soon as possible. Question 33. Is it true that many embouchure difficulties are brought on directly or indirectly by incorrect tonguing? Yes. Embouchure difficulties of practically every description are often the result of incorrect tonguing. It is the duty of every performer to eradicate any form of tonguing error, especially the aforementioned penetration between the teeth and lips. Question 34. Why does the tongue seem rapid one day and slow and sluggish the next? The tongue itself varies very little from one day to the next. On the other hand, the embouchure vibrating suppleness may deviate to such an extent that the lack of speed in the tonguing is often blamed on this latent response. Incorporating the ha, hu, or he, no tongue attacks, and certain buzzing procedures into the daily practice periods will improve the lip vibrating response to a marked degree and enhance any action of the tongue. The lip compression and buzzing routines are presented in the following chapter. Question number 35. When attempting to break the tongue penetration habit, why do the attacks of some performers seem so unresponsive? The tonal timbre is so blatant, and so forth. Attacks often seem unresponsive. The tonal timbre is so blatant, and so forth. When the player is striving to break the tongue penetration habit because, number one, his tongue backstroke was considerably longer while he was allowing his tongue to penetrate between his teeth and lips. Therefore, the tongue backstroke must be increased while he is tonguing from behind his teeth to make the attack speak in a fluent, spontaneous fashion. Number two, since the nerves and muscles in his embouchure formation had become accustomed to the stabbing motion of his penetrating tongue, sufficient time must be taken to acclimate both his tongue and embouchure to their new duties. Number three, the sound of the attack now lacks the unmusical popping sound that is generally associated with the tongue penetration habit, and the player's ear and conception in general must be given time to become adjusted. Number four, the overall lip compression, that is the pinching power, and general embouchure firmness has vastly increased since tonguing from behind his teeth became one of his goals. The time element is required to compensate. Number five, by tonguing from behind his teeth, he is preventing dual personalities in tonal timbre. That is tone quality. While tonguing and slurring, his ear and feel must adjust itself to the new sound and evenness of tonal timbre throughout his entire range. Question 36. Is it more difficult to break the fault of tongue penetration in the upper or the lower register? It is far more difficult to break the tongue penetration fault in the lower register because improperly schooled brass performers have unfortunately been trained to drop their jaws and open their embouchure formations to play the lower tones. It is true also that less mouthpiece pressure is used in the lower register, therefore tongues are much more inclined to penetrate. In the upper register, because of the greater lip compression that is demanded, and the higher position of the tongue in the mouth, the evil of tongue penetration is much less prevalent. Question 37. Why is the tongue penetration fault found to be more prevalent among performers on trombone, baritone, euphonium, and the lower instruments than it is in the ranks of trumpet, cornet, horn, and so forth? Because of larger mouthpieces, lower pitches, the less compressed embouchure formations, the tongue penetration habit is far more prevalent among trombone, baritone, euphonium, and the lower instruments than it is in the ranks of trumpet, cornet, horn, and so forth. As a general rule, however, the less compressed the embouchure formation, the more the tongue is inclined to penetrate between the teeth and lips, regardless of the instrument. Question number 38. Should a performer use extra mouthpiece pressure against his lips for his initial attack? A player should use extra mouthpiece pressure against his lips for the initial attack because he is likely to permit his tongue to penetrate between his teeth and lips, and it tends to arrest any excessive armature motion from the initial jolt of the air column. A stabilized firmness against the lips also adds to the performer's confidence. This advice should be carefully heeded, especially if the player is in the midst of breaking the destructive tongue penetration habit. Question 39. What is the proper procedure to adopt in order to master the art of triple tonguing in a rapid and thorough manner? In order to master the art of triple tonguing in a rapid and thorough manner, the following points must be diligently studied and practiced. 1. Triple tonguing is one of the rapid tongue forms presented in the three tongue categories earlier in this chapter. Because speed and definition must be acquired, the stroke of the tongue must be short and executed as high in the mouth as possible, where only the forepart of the tongue is manipulated. No form of rapid tonguing gives the performer the right to blow from his throat. He must guard against this common playing weakness. Remember, the shorter the tongue stroke, the greater the speed. 2, learn to enunciate the pointed D, D, G, or de, de, ge. That is D-E-H, D-E-H, and G-E-H, without hesitancy. Never use the syllables too, too, coo. That is T-O-O-O, T-O-O-O, K-O-O-O, or T-U, T-U, K-U, as presented in most instruction books. The too, too, coo forms of enunciation make the stroke of the tongue entirely too long for this rapid form of tonguing. Because of the confusion that this stereotyped and incorrect form of articulation created, many brass performers have never succeeded in mastering any form of triple tonguing. If he always enunciates a pointed D, D, G, or de, de, ge, any conscientious student can learn the art of triple tonguing. Number 3, in any form of triple tonguing, the first two D or de syllables are executed by a short tongue stroke which strikes high in the mouth, whereas the third syllable, a pointed G or ge, is executed by a throat emission rather than by any striking motion of the tongue in the usual manner. At the outset, the tongue should be so relaxed that the entire triple tongue enunciation should be almost of a legato nature. Number 4. If you have learned to enunciate the correct triple tongue syllables, that is the pointed D, D, G, or de, de, ge, you are now ready to sing them. In order to keep the short tongue stroke as high as possible in your mouth, sing as high a pitch as you can without straining. Practice this with a slow legato enunciation at the outset and gradually increase both the speed and the definition. When you point the contour of the tongue to acquire more definition, make certain that you do not make the tongue rigid and tense. A pointed tongue must not be a stiff tongue. Practice this until you can sing the prescribed syllables smoothly and rhythmically, then move on. Number 5. Articulate a detached 16th triplet and follow it by a single 8th note. That is, da-da-ga-da, on a middle concert B flat. Sing this pattern as many times as possible, on one breath, until it becomes quite effortless. Then play the same rhythmical figuration in the prescribed manner. Start this by playing softly and slowly, gradually increasing both the speed and the definition, but not the level of dynamics. It is absolutely essential that you do not permit the tongue to tense. Therefore, a legato approach is often required. Exercise particular care toward the end of each playing breath so that accuracy and definition of articulation is maintained throughout. Play this repeated rhythmical figuration with the prescribed syllables on each pitch of the middle concert B-flat arpeggio, that is, middle B-flat, D, F, high B-flat, then F and low B-flat. Each pitch in the arpeggio must be rhythmically articulated to the end of the playing breath before moving on to the next pitch. Do not forget that the higher the pitch played, the higher the tongue must strike in the mouth, and so forth. When this has been accomplished in a satisfactory manner, then move on. Number 6. Articulate two groups of detached 16th triplets and follow them by a single 8th note. On middle concert B flat. Again, play this figuration as many times as possible on one breath. Do not play too loudly and do not permit any inaccuracies to occur toward the end of each playing breath. Play this rhythmical figuration on each pitch of the middle concert B-flat arpeggio, the same as in previous groups. If the results weren't, continue. Number 7. Articulate three groups of detached 16th triplets and follow them by a single 8th note. That is, on middle concert B flat. Practice this rhythmical figuration with the prescribed syllables as many times as possible in one breath on each pitch of the middle concert B flat arpeggio, as previously stated. Your tongue speed and definition of the articulation should be improving by this time. If not, take inventory of all points involved and how correctly you applied them. Do not hurry at this point. When the results are satisfactory, continue. Number 8. Articulate as many groups of detached 16th triplets as you can in one breath and take the usual precautions not to permit any careless articulation to occur toward the end of each playing breath. Do not accent the first note of each triplet group. Concentrate on evenness of volume and rhythm throughout. Practice this on each pitch of the middle concert B-flat arpeggio, as previously stated. Remember, volume and speed are not partners. Practice softly and rapidly. Spend plenty of time mastering this difficult group because it requires considerable tongue endurance to complete it. Only when you are absolutely certain that you can play this group with a minimum of effort, move on. Number 9. In groups of three notes each, play the chromatic scale from middle concert B-flat to the high concert B-flat and return. For example, play middle concert B-flat, B natural, and C as the first group, and use the da on the B-flat, the da on the B natural, and the ga on the C. Practice this many times until it becomes very fluent as far as tongue and valve, that is, or slide, synchronization is concerned. Follow this same procedure on middle concert C sharp, D, and D sharp. Then practice joining the two groups together. Continue by ascending the chromatic scale in groups and by joining them until one octave has been completed. Descend the chromatic scale in groups in the same manner. After the chromatic scale has been worked out for one octave, both in ascending and descending fashion with the triple tongue articulation, apply the same principles to the chromatic scale one octave lower. That is, from the low concert B-flat to the middle concert B-flat and return. When both octaves have been worked out in a satisfactory manner as prescribed, join them into an ascending and descending two-octave chromatic scale. Practice this until you can play it with a crisp enunciation and effortlessly as possible. This may require several months. This same plan should be used to work out various arpeggios and other progressions in triple tongue fashion. Number 10. After practicing the suggested triple tongue drills and the dynamics and the short tongue stroke has been given sufficient time to become adjusted to their new task, the tongue speed will have a tendency literally to run away with the tempo. The actual speed stroke of the tongue is so minute that it often feels as if it were articulating into space and touching nowhere. This is sometimes known as a tongue roll. When this occurs, work right along with it by increasing the overall speed and reducing the volume accordingly. The goal is to acquire control of this triple tongue roll. Assiduous daily study and practice is absolutely vital. Number 11. In certain difficult cases, where the player seems to be unable to make the throat syllable G or G strong enough to match the dynamics of the first two syllables, that is the D-E-H, D-E-H, that is that, that, or to make the triple tongue group rhythmically even, proceed as follows. 1. Practice the throat syllable G or G on a few of the suggested triple tongue drills until this type of attack speaks more fluently. Work on this slowly at first. 2. Practice the triple tongue syllables, da da ge, use an extremely heavy emphasis on the ge syllable. Go through a few of the drills very slowly in this manner. This exercise is sometimes known as the train. In order to point that G, it might be necessary to use a little K, as I just did. However, the throat syllable must be emphasized. 3. The daily practice of ha, hu, and he, no tongue attacks, will gradually enhance the embouchure vibrating fluency. Therefore, it is beneficial to all forms of playing. An agile tongue manipulation cannot be acquired if the embouchure vibrating response is faulty. The numerous points and drills just presented should provide adequate material for developing and maintaining a good, reliable triple tongue. However, once the correct method of triple tongue has been mastered, any material of this nature may be used. Most instruction books imply that the rapid triple tongue emission is intended strictly for the staccato mode of articulation. Make a point of mastering a good legato triple tongue as well as the staccato form. The rapid tongue forms contribute a great deal towards essential playing confidence. Question number 40. What is the proper procedure to adopt in order to master the art of double tonguing in a rapid and thorough manner? Other than the fact that the syllables for double tonguing, that is a binary rhythmical formation, are used in a different order than for the triple tongue, that is a ternary rhythmical formation, the procedure for mastering the art of double tongue is almost identical. The following points must be diligently studied and practiced. Number one, double tongue is another one of the rapid tongue forms presented in the three tongue categories earlier in this chapter. This stroke of tongue must also be executed as high in the mouth as possible, where only the forepart of the tongue is manipulated. Remember, do not blow from the throat. Guard against this weakness. Number two, learn to enunciate the pointed DG or de ge without hesitancy. Never use the syllables tu ku as presented in most instruction books. The tu ku forms of enunciation make the stroke of the tongue entirely too long for any form of rapid tonguing. Any performer can learn to double tongue if he will master the pointed DG or de ge. Number three, in any form of double tonguing, the first pointed D or de syllable is executed by a short tongue stroke which strikes high in the mouth, whereas the second syllable, a pointed G or ge, is executed by the throat emission rather than by any striking motion of the tongue in the usual manner. At the outset, the tongue should be so relaxed that the entire double tongue articulation should be almost of legato nature. Number four, if you have learned to enunciate the correct double tongue syllables, that is the pointed DG or de ge, you are now ready to sing them. In order to keep the short tongue stroke as high as possible in your mouth, sing as high a pitch as you can without straining. Practice this with a slow legato enunciation at the outset and gradually increase both the speed and the definition of the articulation. When you can sing the prescribed syllables smoothly and rhythmically, then move on. Number five, articulate two detached 16th notes and an eighth note, that is de-ga-de, on middle conch B flat. Sing this pattern as many times as possible in one breath until the figuration becomes quite effortless. Then play the same rhythm in the identical manner. Start this by playing softly and slowly, gradually increasing both the speed and the definition, but not the level of the dynamics. Use the legato approach and at no time permit the tongue to become tense. Retain accuracy of articulation to the very end of each playing breath. Repeat this figuration as many times as possible on one playing breath on the pitches of the middle conch B-flat arpeggio, that is, middle B-flat, D, F, high B-flat, F, and low B-flat. Remember, the higher the note played, the higher the tongue must strike in the mouth, and so forth. When this has been accomplished in a satisfactory manner, then continue. Number six, articulate four detached 16th notes and an eighth note. That is, da 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 on middle conch B flat. Play this as many times as possible in one breath, and do not permit inaccuracies to occur toward the end of each playing breath. Play this on each pitch of the middle conch B-flat arpeggio, that is middle B-flat, D, F, high B-flat, F, and low B-flat. If the results are improving, move on. Number 7, articulate 6 detached 16th notes and an 8th note. That is, da 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 da. On middle concert B flat. Again, practice each group as many times as possible in one breath. Then move on to the other pitches in the middle concert B flat arpeggio. That is the usual middle B flat, D, F, high B flat, F, and low B flat. If your results show progress, move on. If not, take inventory of all points presented thus far. Number 8, articulate as many detached 16th notes, that is binary formations, as possible on one playing breath, and so forth. And do not permit careless articulation toward the end of the playing breath. Concentrate on evenness of volume and rhythm throughout. Practice each pitch in the concert B-flat arpeggio in this manner. Do not hurry through this important group, as it requires considerable tongue endurance to complete it. If the results warrant it, move on. Number 9. In groups of 4 notes each, that is 4 detached 16th notes, play the chromatic scale from middle concert B-flat to high concert B-flat in return. For example, play middle concert B-flat, B natural, C and C-sharp as the first group, and use de on the B-flat, ge on the B natural, de on the C, and ge on the C-sharp. Daka 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 dum. Practice this many times until it becomes very fluent as far as tongue and valve or slide synchronization is concerned. Follow this same procedure on middle concert D, D sharp, E, and F. Then practice by joining the two groups. Complete the entire chromatic scale in this manner. Descend the chromatic scale from the high concert B flat. After the chromatic scale has been worked out for one octave, both in ascending and descending fashion with a double tongue articulation, apply the same principles to the chromatic scale one octave lower, that is from the low concert B-flat to the middle concert B-flat and return. When both octaves have been worked out in a satisfactory manner, as prescribed, join them into an ascending and descending two octave chromatic scale. Practice this until it can be accomplished with a crisp enunciation and as effortlessly as possible. Apply the same principle to arpeggios and other progressions in double tongue fashion. This may require several months of consistent daily study and practice. Do not become discouraged. Number 10, after practicing the suggested double tongue drills and the double tongue manipulation, and the valve or slide coordination has been given sufficient time to become adjusted to the new task, the tongue speed will have a tendency to run literally away with the tempo. When this occurs, work right along with it by increasing the overall speed and reducing the volume accordingly. In this way, you will eventually acquire control of the rapid double tongue. Number 11, in certain cases where the player seems unable to make the throat syllable G or G strong enough to match the dynamics and clarity of the first tongue syllable, proceed as follows. A, practice the throat syllable G on each note of the same suggested double tongue drills until this part of the double tongue enunciation speaks more fluently. Use a slow tempo throughout. B, practice the double tongue articulation, DG or DG, but use an extremely strong emphasis on the G or G throat syllable. Play several drills in this manner. Use a slow tempo throughout. C. A daily practice of ha, hu, and he, no tongue attacks, will greatly enhance the embouchure vibrating fluency. This is beneficial to all forms of playing. Rapid tongue articulation cannot be acquired with any degree of accuracy and consistency if your embouchure vibrating response is faulty. Number 12. Most instruction books imply that the rapid double tongue emission is intended strictly for the staccato mode of articulation. Make a point of mastering a good legato double tongue as well as the staccato form. All rapid tongue forms contribute a great deal to essential playing confidence. The numerous points and drills just mentioned should provide adequate material for developing and maintaining a good, reliable double tongue. However, once the correct method of double tonguing has been mastered, any material of this nature may be used. Question number 41. What is the proper procedure to adopt to master the art of rapid single tonguing? Much like the tongue strokes used for the rapid triple and double tonguing, the stroke for rapid single tonguing must be very short and pointed. Striking as high in the mouth as possible, where only the fore part of the tongue is manipulated. Enunciate a D or da. Never use the syllable two. The two, that is T-O-O-O or T-U, forms of enunciation make the stroke of the tongue entirely too long and unwieldy to control any form of rapid tonguing. Contrary to popular opinion, the player's first goal should be speed. Definition and accuracy should come later. This is certainly not intended to condone sloppy playing, but rather to permit the performer to experience the sensation of speed before he strives to gain any form of tonguing finesse. If speed is not given precedent to accuracy in certain stages of development, all too many players will never achieve it. While striving to increase speed, keep the tongue as pointed and relaxed as possible, and experiment with the lesser dynamic levels. Remember, excessive volume and speed are not partners. Do not tolerate any form of blowing from the throat. Guard against it. After some degree of speed has been attained, then concentrate on improving the clarity and definition of the response. This may be accomplished by pointing the contour of the tongue. However, this is not to imply that any stiffness of the tongue must be tolerated. In all forms of rapid tonguing, the idea of even blowing must constantly prevail. Do not overlook the fact that the tongue manipulation and the cone-like air column must line up with the lip aperture, that is, the space blown open. The exercises that were suggested in the triple and double tonguing groups may be used with the single tongue, that is, the D or DA enunciation. Or you may select exercises of your own choosing. However, the goal of speed should be achieved on a single pitch, that is a staccato 16th notes on middle concert B flat, D, F, high B flat, and the middle F and the low B flat, before delving into scale and arpeggio progressions. In short, the synchronization of the tongue and finger combinations, or the tongue and slide manipulation, should not be attempted until maximum tongue speed and definition has been accomplished on a single pitch. Remember, the higher the pitch, the higher the tongue must strike in the mouth. Do not become alarmed if some definition and clarity is lost during the initial attempts to coordinate tongue and fingers or tongue and slide. It is far better to keep the tongue very relaxed during the synchronization process and strive for crisp definition later than to make the approach with the tongue too stiff. Remember to use the syllables D or de, D-E-H, never too, that is T-O-O-O, or T-U, for any of the rapid single tongue forms. Question 42. In what respects are rapid single, double, and triple tonguing related? Rapid single, double, and triple tonguing are related because, 1, for any given pitch, the tongued part of all three modes of rapid articulation must strike the same spot in the mouth. 2, the stroke of the tongue in all three cases must be short, pointed, and strike as high in the mouth as possible. 3, in all three forms of rapid tonguing, only the fore part of the tongue is manipulated. 4, in all three methods of articulation, there are marked limitations in dynamics. Question 43. Is it true that the ha, hu, and he, no tongue attacks, assist the various forms of tongue attacks in articulation in general? The ha, hu, and he, no tongue attacks, make the lips vibrate to the driving force provided by the cone-like air column, without the usual assistance from the tongue manipulation. Therefore, the fluency and response of the embouchure vibrating factor is tremendously enhanced. In short, if the sensitivity of the lip vibrations is benefited by the various forms of no-tongued articulation, then all other forms of tongue attacks and articulation in general are thereby improved. The results achieved in any form of brass playing are never better than the embouchure vibrating fluency will permit. It is to the performer's benefit, therefore, to practice the ha, hu, he, no tongue attacks during every daily practice period. Even the elasticity and flexibility factors are benefited by this procedure. Question 44. How many forms of D attack are used in brass playing? The D forms of attack used in brass playing are as follows. Number 1, the broad, flat tongue stroke, which is used for the production of legato or semi-legato articulations. This legato tongue lightly brushes the back of the upper teeth, the upper gums, or higher, depending upon the register being played. The initial attack commences with a da, do, or di enunciation, and each succeeding articulation is enunciated with a la, lu, or li emission until the next inhalation takes place. The flow of breath for this mode of playing must be even and merely articulated into rather than interrupted. Remember, the word legato means to connect. Number two, the short pointed D or DEH, that's de, which strikes even higher in the mouth for the rapid single tongue, and the tongued portions of both the double and triple tongue articulations. In order to minimize the length of the tongue stroke, so the greater tongue speeds may be obtained, only the forepart of the tongue is manipulated. Number three, the da, do, or di enunciations, which are used in conjunction with the short and slow tongue backstroke to produce detached pianissimo attacks. Number four, the relaxed but pointed da, do, or di enunciation, which should be used by all nervous performers for the production of their initial attacks. This is Donald S. Reinhardt. I am reading from my newly written book called The Encyclopedia of the Pivot System. I will continue on the next tape, which will be tape number 9.